Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I am Dan. The voice you will be hearing shortly is my co-host, Jordan. We're a couple dudes who generally like to sit down, drink novelty beverages, and talk about Alex Jones, wherein the structure of the show is I know a lot about Alex Jones, and my co-host, Jordan, knows very little, and I tell him about it. And he gets infuriated by things, as is the natural reaction to someone like an Alex Jones in the world. You're joining us here today on the part two of our in-depth discussion, exploration of Alex Jones's 2009 documentary, in heavy quotes, documentary, The Obama Deception. If you are just randomly jumping in here, I'd probably recommend you go listen to the first episode before this one, because otherwise you missed out on Alex using some fake quotes. Which is always a lot of fun. It's always fun to find those instances of like, nah, this is just made up. But where we left off in the last episode was Alex was just about to introduce his proof, the evidence that he has that the New World Order was being announced by the media. The media in 2008 was coming out and saying like, oh, we've been hiding the New World Order for all this time, but now, hey, we want to tell you it's real. So we'll jump right back into that here in a second. But before we do that, I want to take a second, because this is Thanksgiving week, and in the spirit of thanking the people who make this show possible, our donors, who are the ones who are the reason for us doing this in the first place, this Obama deception coverage, I thought I would take a little bit of time to thank someone who has joined up with the team, someone who's donated to the show. We appreciate it very much. So, Colin, I would like to say thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
So thank you, Colin. We appreciate it also very much. And all of you who support the show, it means the world to us. So thank you. Thank you again. Here you go. Let's jump right back into the Obama Deception Part 2.
And now, after years of denial, the media and the elite themselves are proudly announcing that not only is world government real, but it is the answer to the financial crisis that they carefully engineered.
Alex isn't proving that they carefully engineered this. That's nonsense. It's a claim that he's not defending or backing up or proving in any way. But right now, what we have on screen here is 4 articles, all of which we've talked about in some manner in the past, that all don't say what Alex claims they say.
They
just have headlines like this Herald Tribune article, A Chance for a New World Order, the Financial Times article, and now for a world government. Like, they're all just conversations that people have made, like editorials. Isracast?
Yeah,
is
I'm assuming Isracast is Israeli.
But they're all just people who are having conversations about the idea of, like, the possibility of a global government or things like that. None of them are an announcement that the New World Order is here.
Also,
all of this is bullshit. We've gone over this in great detail in the past. Alex is functioning off headlines. None of these articles say those things.
Also, the Isracast one?
Yeah.
The
Gaza and Obama's New World Order.
If I know anything about Israel in 2009, I'm gonna go with that's not a pro-New World Order. If you're throwing Gaza and Obama's New World in there, you're probably arguing that Obama's going to try and create a two-state solution there, and they should be killed or whatever.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the Wall Street Journal tells us that the North American Union is here and that getting rid of the dollar for a common currency with Canada and Mexico is good.
This is an article he flashes up on screen, the title of which is How Realistic is a North American Currency? We've talked about this in the past.
The answer is not.
Not very. If you read the actual article, it's like, it doesn't look like this is ever going to happen.
Not likely.
The Financial Times of London, published by a member of the Bilderberg Group, crowed that a dictatorial world government had been kept in the shadows for our own good, and that it was now time for it to emerge from behind the curtains of national security.
This is an article from the Financial Times called "And Now for a World Government." It was written by a guy named Gideon Rackman.
Great name.
I have
so many great names in this.
It doesn't say that it's been kept behind the scenes for a long time, and now it's time to unveil it. But the title would suggest that.
Yeah.
It sounds like, I think I said this when we covered the article initially, it sounds like a host introducing the next act.
It also sounds like the Monty Python.
And now for something completely different.
And now for something completely different.
I think that might be what he's playing on. He's a British dude.
It does sound like that, right? It does sound like that.
The author of "And Now for a World Government" article, Gideon Rackman, by everything I can tell about him, is not a Bilderberg member. He did attend the 2017 Bilderberg meeting. That is true. But so did Trump's Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross. So did past InfoWars guest, Neil Ferguson. So did Lindsey Graham. So did Trump's National Security Advisor, H.R. McMaster. So, I mean, it means nothing.
Yeah, a murderer's row of good
people.
But
it means nothing.
Yeah.
But beyond.
No, it means nothing.
It means
I
went to a conference.
Yeah.
Beyond that, all I can find evidence of Gideon Rackman, in terms of attending Bilderberg is he attended a number of times in his capacity as a journalist, not as a participant. It's only a few occasions in the 2000s. None of this proves that he's a member of anything. And in fact, he's been very publicly opposed to many positions that Alex would describe as globalist, such as strongly arguing against the idea of England getting mixed up in the euro, which is something that Alex would say all globalists are for.
Right.
So if he's a Bilderberg member and is announcing world government, wouldn't he be on board with ditching the pound in favor of the euro?
You would think.
He wasn't. He was super against it and held public debates with people about it and vociferously defended not getting involved. Also, small point, there's no such thing as being a member of the Bilderberg group. That doesn't exist. The only membership category that exists is member of the steering committee.
Uh-huh.
Or somebody who has like a, you know, president of the group. The only membership category is membership of the steering committee. Steering committee is the group that plans meetings, figures out like speakers, invites people and such like that. It's a rotating cast of
the party planners committee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The rest of it, the attendees are people who have prominent positions in business, the arts, industry, government, diplomacy, those sorts of things. They get invited to come, mingle in a conference.
Yeah.
There isn't a membership.
I would go. I bet the food's great.
I bet it's amazing.
I bet it's amazing.
Oh my God. I read one article. I can't remember if it was, I think it was about Bilderberg.
Yeah.
And it was one of these like conspiracy blogs, and it was like, they're staying at the posh $400 a night hotel. I'm like, hold on a second. These people are billionaires.
Yeah.
$400 is slumming it for them. Why are you, I'd understand for me that would be cost prohibitive.
Insane.
It would be nuts.
Yeah.
But for them, that's $400 a night.
I saved up for a fucking year so my girlfriend and I could spend one night in a $200 a night hotel. And that was beyond the lap of luxury for me.
And that absurd restaurant you went to.
No, that was her mom.
That's right.
I can't afford that shit.
The idea of, I mean, it's a glorified work retreat conference. Retreat would be more like Bohemian Grove.
Yeah.
But the Bilderberg.
Yeah. There's no team building events. There's
no
just
trust falls.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like
but what if there are?
It's like fucking Comic-Con, but for assholes.
Yeah. And people who have, interest in, diplomacy, business relations, stuff like that.
Asshole.
White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel stated on record that they can't let this crisis go to waste.
This means nothing.
You never want a serious crisis to go to waste. And what I mean by that is an opportunity to do things that you think you could not do before.
That's just, I mean, you don't even need to talk about that. That's an absurdly misused quote on Alex's part.
And Henry Kissinger, who gave Barack Obama his first job out of college.
Really?
National television. That the economic collapse was a great opportunity to bring in the New World Order. He went on to say that Barack Obama was the perfect person to sell it to the world.
But he can give a new impetus to American foreign policy, partly because the reception of him is so extraordinary around the world. I think his task will be to develop an overall strategy for America.
Pick it up, Grandpa.
In this period. When really a new world order can
also
be
created, please die sooner. You fucking suck.
A crisis
in June of
I'm not interested.
Wait, did he say new world order there at any point?
He says it a lot. Because like they First of all, Kissinger is a fucking globalist. That's not an accusation that's being made. David Rockefeller too. Yes, you could describe them as people who are interested in global cooperation and integration. So it's not like a dirty word that is like, oh no, I would shy away from this. And for them, generally speaking, New World Order isn't some sort of term that describes a shadowy cabal that's the intersection of the remnants of Adam Weishaupt's Illuminati mixed with Jewish banking elites in Europe.
It's like every time the World Order changes. There have been like 500 New World Orders in the past 100 years.
Right.
As alliances shift and change, as different interests align, like, there's this whole situation. Every New World Order is just like a weak.
It's the opposite of the past world order.
Trump created a new world order.
Absolutely.
You know? And that's one where we're the fucking worst.
Right. But if you're always trending towards progress or always looking towards international cooperation and, helping each other.
Yeah.
Instead of wars for no reason and that sort of shit, you'll always be working towards a new confluence of events. There'll always be something better.
Right.
There'll always be something you're aspiring towards. And people like Kissinger use the term New World Order to describe that because it is a new order of the world.
Right.
A new ordering of things. I don't think it's as evil or suspicious, but it is fucking weird that he says it a lot. It is one of those things that, like, you should stop.
Yeah, just because but at the same time, why?
If he stopped,
it doesn't
matter. But that would also play into the hands of the conspiracy people would just be like, why doesn't he say New World Order anymore?
Yeah.
That sort
of thing. It doesn't matter. If you're Kissinger, you're either hated because you're a monster who should be sent to a war crimes tribunal.
Go to the Hague.
Or you're hated because people think that you're a monster who should be sent to a war crimes tribunal for a different reason.
It's either you think you should go there because you're right or because you're wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Great.
Yeah.
I don't care about the ethical implications of Kissinger's actions or anything like that right now because I think that they're really tertiary and to the side of what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
So Barack Obama went to Occidental College for his freshman and sophomore years, and then transferred to Columbia University to finish his degree, graduating in 1983. His first job out of college was at the Business International Corporation, which has nothing to do with Henry Kissinger. The conspiracy community latched onto this job and said it was proof that Obama was a CIA plant because in 1977, Elliot Haynes, the company's founder's son, told the New York Times that his father had used the company to provide four CIA agents cover between 1955 and 1960. Even if we assume the information that's coming from Elliot is correct, it still does nothing to prove that Obama was a CIA asset or that they were still using this company to provide him cover. For one, the company isn't a fake company. There are tons of employees that they pay to publish newsletters for clients, plan conferences, and do extensive research. During the Cold War, there are a ton of companies that had clandestine agreements with many businesses to help hide their spies. One of the reasons that journalism and publishing seems to have had a higher incidence of that sort of thing is that journalists have a reason to be in a foreign country that doesn't raise suspicions. As far as the facts go, that's about as nefarious as Business International gets from everything I can tell that is true.
Yeah.
The rest of it is, and it's interesting. I'm willing to believe that they did provide cover for spies in the Cold War. Doesn't mean they always did. Doesn't mean that didn't stop when the Cold War ended. It doesn't mean that everybody who worked there was CIA. None of they do nothing to prove any of these things. Also, it has nothing to do with Kissinger. Obama has never worked for Kissinger.
I was going to say.
Didn't happen.
It's a little bit frustrating to me that for a certain class of conspiracy theorist, there is no limit. Mm-hmm. Like, because look, I'm all for indulging in a conspiracy theory and trying to figure out like little things and then being like, that's dumb.
Right.
But that one, that's such a stretch. Even if you're a conspiracy theorist, shouldn't you be like, there's nothing there, man?
Well, see, that's the problem, too, is that this is one of those instances where Alex uses specifics. He says his first job out of college.
Yeah.
Well, I can find out what that is.
Yeah.
We'll see, is there a Kissinger connection here? Nope, absolutely not. Oh, you're lying.
Okay, then
that's why you shouldn't use specifics so much.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Stop giving him advice.
Did you miss Endgame?
Did I miss Endgame?
Do you miss it?
Do I miss it?
Do you miss Endgame?
No.
Because you're about to get a lot of stuff that is basically just Endgame all over again.
Great. Awesome.
2006,
remember this footage from Endgame?
I do remember this footage.
To gather intelligence on the shadow government's agenda for the coming years.
B-roll.
Alex is just reusing B-roll of people getting into cars from Endgame.
Lower the budget, baby.
I think that's the queen.
Hey, queen. This is literally
investigative
from
journalist Edgar. And best-selling author Daniel Estulin had been tracking the Bilderberg for more than 16 years.
This is literally from Endgame.
Oh, yeah.
His mold.
Is he going to do the same interview?
Informed him that the elite were planning to first run the price of gas up to $150 a barrel. Unimaginable in 2006.
Skip to the end.
I want to talk about this really quick because this is fucked up.
Yeah.
So Alex is saying that Daniel Estulin has inside sources inside Bilderberg that told him that they were planning to rise the price of gas up to $150 and then bring it down.
Right.
Here's why this is a problem. He didn't bring that up in Endgame. That didn't come up. Secondly, we know from listening to Alex Jones's show that Alex Jones's oil rig chaplain friend, Lindsay Williams, is the person that Alex says told him that the globalists plan to raise the gas price up to that exact same amount and then bring it down. Why is he now in the Obama deception saying that Daniel Estulin told him that? Further, in all of his appearances on the show with Lindsay Williams, why haven't we heard Alex say, oh yeah, Daniel Estulin told me the same thing? In this documentary, when he's talking about Estulin's prediction, why doesn't he say, this really credible guy, Lindsay Williams, who was a chaplain on an oil rig and lived with the globalists for years, defends exactly what you're saying. Why not? That's weird.
Well, cause he doesn't have,
He knows Lindsay at this time?
No. He doesn't have footage of Lindsay outside of the Bilderberg crew.
No, but he could still be talking to Daniel Estulin and say, Lindsay Williams, who lived with the globalists for years, said exactly the same thing for you. Isn't that amazing that your stories line
up? Don't complicate it. We've got B-roll. Roll it.
Right. Also,
Lindsay may have been hiding in Daniel Estulin's ponytail.
That's true. That is a crazy ponytail.
That's a crazy ponytail. Offensive. No, it's bananas.
I don't want to talk about it, Daniel Estulin, more than we already have, except to say that that is weird that Alex doesn't bring that up and that he's really fast and loose about who's telling him about these oil predictions.
But sources.
The rest of the stuff that Daniel Estulin is going to say is just stuff that you would know if you followed the news. Like, none of this is predictive. None of it is, and his predictions are wrong. They proved to not be accurate in terms of, like, he says oil's gonna get up to 150. It didn't. It got up to like 130 or something like that. It was a big rise, yeah. But, and then with the idea, all of the stuff, just if you followed trends, like Gerald Celente claims to.
Well, not like Gerald Celente.
Like he claims
to. If you followed trends, but not like Gerald Celente.
If you had a decent awareness, you would know a lot of the stuff that he's saying. None of it has to come from secret Bilderberg sources.
So far, what I can summate from the evidence he's presented so far, it's
that. You mean Estulin or Alex?
Alex.
Okay.
Well, this entire fucking documentary and everybody in it.
Right.
No, that doesn't say what you say it does. And even if it did, you're wrong about that.
Yeah.
You're lying and you're wrong about the thing that you're lying about. Even if the thing that you were lying about was true.
Yeah, it's a Chi-Com nesting doll of lies.
Yeah.
He also reported that after suckering the middle class back into the stock market, the group was going to implode the subprime mortgage market and destroy public confidence.
Oh, no, everybody saw that coming.
Why didn't he talk about that in Endgame?
Oh, well, it hadn't happened yet.
But he would know it was going to happen.
Yeah, but it hadn't
They were planning
happened yet.
On doing that.
You don't want to make a prediction that you can't back up.
They were planning on doing that. Why didn't he tell anybody? Why didn't he warn people?
Because people are going to think he's crazy if he starts saying that there's some sort of subprime mortgage crisis.
No, he
that
wouldn't.
Nobody else saw coming at all.
A lot of people did.
No, nobody saw it coming.
It was.
Don't you remember that movie, The Big Short? Mm-hmm. Nobody saw it coming.
Like Obama. Like, if you followed the news closely, you would know that there were a lot of concerns.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things that, you know, we're getting from this morning and this afternoon.
That ponytail is fucking nuts.
The energy crisis, the price of.
This is Daniel Estulin sitting in a bar talking to Big Jim Tucker, whose back is to the camera.
Big Jim.
Rest in peace, Big Jim Tucker, guy who wrote a overtly anti-Semitic publication specifically published by Willis Carto for the express purpose of shifting public opinion against the Jews.
Come on, who would say that?
The afternoon conference, which started at 4:00, 4:30, they were talking about one of the American delegates, I wasn't told who exactly it was talking about the...
If you're watching this, it's interesting to watch Daniel Estulin's body language, because what he's trying to do is recall information that he already knows and sort of improvise a storyline out of it.
Yeah.
You can see him coming up with this as he's going along. There's a part of it that to me indicates creativity. There's a creative thinking process that is going on that he's telling, because if he was reporting from what somebody inside Bilderberg told him, he'd have his notes or something like that.
You don't need notes.
He'd have the notes of the conversation.
What journalist?
He's just riffing.
What self-respecting journalist would use notes?
He's not a journalist.
That's like,
he's a guy who was a space commander. Tell him about Bilderberg and he puts it in a book.
That's like a waiter writing your order down. A good waiter doesn't have to write anything down.
I would prefer they do.
There's
a certain point of accuracy that comes into it. When I get my burger, I want what I want on it. And when I get my news,
really
I want,
the
truth.
Don't you really want a creative interpretation of what you asked for in
generally,
a burger?
Generally, no. Generally.
Also, now, you may be being influenced in part by the fact that now that I see Daniel Estulin again, he looks so much like a magician. It is insane.
It is.
He looks, and the way he's holding his hands, and he's kind of like, you could see him having a card palmed now. Like, he's a magician for sure.
Is this your New World Order?
Yeah, exactly.
That sort of thing?
I wrote New World Order down on the Six of Hearts.
The American citizens have had, with the housing prices going down, so they're not investing that money.
See, look at the way he's moving his hands!
They need to create the illusion that everything is going well, so what they're going to do over the next year and a half, is to bring the market back up to 1998, 1999 levels.
What?
They're going to get all the suckers...
Purchase the DVD copy of the Obama Deception.
And that's when they're going to make the economy...
I'm lying.
They need to destroy the economy.
I'm lying.
Because as we're running out of oil, when people don't travel, at least that's what they're saying, when people don't have money, they don't travel, they don't spend any money, which means you don't waste a lot of oil and natural gas.
What? What?
No.
What?
No, it made sense.
That's the afternoon conversation.
So when people don't travel, when people don't have oil,
well,
they don't travel.
Because he predicated that on we don't have oil.
Right.
So they're running out of oil. So when people don't have money, they don't travel, and that they don't spend. You know,
and then we don't use oil.
So you have the sources.
Well, actually, there are two people who are members of the Bilderberg Club.
It's actual members.
They're members of the Bilderberg Club who, for years and years and years,
I bet,
have been going and participating in all the conversations. And they've always been dead on, always. And last year, the oil prices are going to go up to 150. At the time, it was 30.
That's wrong.
Went up to 76, basically doubled. If it doubles again, it's going to be back to where these people
say. They attack Iran and will it, honestly.
They did.
Estulin and
we bite now.
Like Jim Tucker are...
So fucking Big Jim.
Big Jim Tucker here with his fun hat and misfit suit.
Those guys.
That is not a bespoke suit.
No.
What Estulin is wearing is crazy.
Yeah.
He looks nuts. But
It does look like a British guy in the 50s and his Indian attaché.
Yeah.
Conquering India. Yeah. It looks insane.
But, they're holding up a copy of his book, The True Story of the Bilderberg Club.
Right.
That is the book that quotes the space commander, the Ashtar space commander.
Great.
Able to report on future events with stunning accuracy.
Is that a shirt?
All because they know the agenda.
It looks like he's wearing as a shirt. Hammer.
Remember this?
Yes. Oh, I do.
The violin is back.
Oh, I do. Structure.
125 of the richest and most influential individuals on the globe make up its members.
This is the same old voiceover too,
and the same footage.
This is the exact same clip.
He just
edited the endgame into this documentary.
Padding that runtime, baby.
Jesus.
When I got to this point, I had such mixed feelings. Like, sincerely mixed feelings. The first was
nostalgia.
What? No, the primary feeling was, what the fuck is happening? Why is that violin back?
Yeah.
Why am I seeing the same shit over in this documentary? And then, the second feeling was nostalgia.
I was like, oh.
As soon as that violin was going for like 3 seconds, I was like, I love this song. Yeah. It filled me with sentiment, and I was like, oh, God, I love it.
Oh, man, we can never do this again.
From Istanbul, Turkey, Chantilly, Virginia.
Chantilly lace.
The elusive Bilderberg Group.
You did.
Bilderberg always insist on a media blackout.
Yep.
By June of 2008, we had already figured out that Barack Obama was Putin's puppet of choice.
Okay. So how'd you figure that one out?
Well, on June 4th, 2008, he won the Democratic primary. So like in June 2008.
So on June 4th, he won
the primary.
The primary.
So he was the Democratic candidate.
Right.
And you would have to be fucking high to think that a Republican was going to win after 8 years of Bush.
Yeah.
Like it made me nervous because I know how society works.
Yeah.
And the idea of an African American running made me think like, this might not, people might stay home, or you might end up seeing, a lot of Democrats in the South not come out. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there was a lot of concern.
Isn't that crazy that the only thing that we, I remember even at that time being like, oh, the only thing that I am scared of, because W's presidency was such a disaster, mm-hmm. is that somehow, despite the fact that people don't want a Republican in there, they'll be like, oh, he's black, so we can't have that.
Right, right.
And instead, we got a black president, and because of that, we now have Trump.
Yeah, it is, you take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah.
And it turns out the rough ends up destroying the entire world.
Is America ready for a black president? We were, and now we very much weren't.
Yep. Oh, just real quick. I need to drive home that saying that you knew, like, as if it's predictive or like you're a psychic, you knew in June 2008 that Obama was, he was heading places. Fuck you. Fuck you right off.
After running a 6 month long campaign with zero support and the natural assumption that he never had any chance to defeat Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. we knew in June when he won the nomination, he was the puppet. Good work, guys.
Congratulations on your Gerald Celentian predictive powers.
National media claimed that during the weekend, the Bilderberg Group was scheduled to meet, that Obama had speaking engagements set for Chicago and the Midwest.
They claimed
it. We knew better.
Did you?
In a classic bait and switch, the Obama campaign told the press corps to get on Obama's campaign plane and that Obama would join them on the flight to Chicago. Campaign staff then slammed the door shut. The fawning press had been shanghaied as Obama's campaign aircraft lifted off without Obama.
Really?
Alex would laugh his ass off if Trump did that.
That is hilarious.
Alex would be like, fuck you, Jim Acosta. Yeah. You got stuck on a plane.
Yeah.
I hope you got recycled air.
Did he do that on purpose?
Yeah.
Shanghai? Not for the reason that he's saying, of course.
Let's let the press guy on the plane talk, okay. And then we'll cover
it. Because I don't remember
why
this.
Why were we not told about this meeting and on our flight until the doors were shut and we were about to taxi to take off.
Again, we had a desire, Senator Obama had a desire to do some meetings, others had a desire to meet with him tonight in a private way, and that's what we're doing. And we set up these meetings, they're being done tonight. Again,
is there more than one meeting? Is there more than one person with whom?
I'm not going to get into all the details of the meetings. I don't know that I've got a ton more different answers for all of your questions.
Obama.
So, like, here's what I want to say about this. Like, if it was some sort of evil, nefarious plan, they would have got someone slicker to be on that plane.
Yeah, I know.
That was real bad.
Yeah.
That guy was terrible then. Hey, guys, I don't know if I want to say anything more about this.
He looks eerily like a youth pastor and acts eerily like one as well. Hey, guys, we're going to have a fun time anyways, though. I can't really say so much about what God is planning on
right now.
But we're going to have a good old night. We're going to sing some songs.
I just picture him being like, guys, I'm sorry. I got to go to the bathroom. He walks away and then
one of the parachutes is gone.
One of the reporters looks back. He's like, bombs away. It's like, this got away from me. I'm not doing a good job with the press.
I do not know what I'm doing. Yeah. I don't know why they asked me to do this.
I quit journalism. I am out. This is very bad. This smart sort of Occam's razor explanation for this is that Obama and Hillary wanted to meet because he had just won the primary.
And he was
and there was a conversation about what kind of role she might have in the administration, that sort of thing. And they didn't want press around, which I understand. I think that's a little bit shady. But in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that's that nefarious. Alex is going to suggest that they were both at Bilderberg.
Right.
And that's why they did this secret ruse in order for him to get to Bilderberg.
Where was Bilderberg at the time?
It was in Chantilly, Virginia.
Oh, it's in Virginia. Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he's going to suggest that, but there's no evidence that either of them were at Bilderberg. There's no pictures. Alex was there the whole time videotaping people going in and out.
That's right. He was there
the
whole time.
He was in Virginia.
Right.
Like, he was there. He has no evidence that they're there. The records don't show that they're there.
Yeah.
And there's no reason for them to be there.
That's how you know it's a cover-up.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nonsense. I think that the most likely scenario is that they were just, you know, wanted to have a private meeting, which I think they shouldn't have done, but who cares? It's not as evil as Alex is presenting. It's just sort of like a little bit abusive of the press.
Something I'm noticing right now is that this is a terrible documentary.
Oh, you bet.
not even in a substantive way. That's not how I'm talking about this at all. I'm not talking about all the lies and all the bullshit. Just as a documentary, this is not entertaining.
No. You can kind of get a sense of why I hated doing this preparation. It's like,
yeah.
There's so many things that you send you down stupid rabbit holes. There's so many things that are just like, well, that's not true, but how do I prove that? You know, there's so many things like that. And there's things like this where it's like, there's an innocuous explanation for this, but you're never going to accept it. So,
also, that's pretty funny.
What? Shanghaiing the media?
Yeah, that's pretty funny. You gotta get, if he wasn't having, like, I would way prefer if he was just like, I need a night off. I'm going to go hang out with Michelle.
Right.
And then he Shanghai the press. That's hilarious. If that was in a movie, that would have been played for laughs so hard.
The only way I accept that as a fun goof is if afterwards he sends them like an edible arrangement. All of the people who are on
board. Oh, for sure.
You know,
yeah.
Send
make it up
nice
to them.
Basket.
Do something nice. Yeah.
I wasn't going to Chicago.
Huh?
He had a meeting to attend.
A secret meeting.
Oh.
Initially, it was believed that the secret meeting took place at Clinton's Washington, D.C. home. Obama's spokesman denied that, but won't confirm where the former rivals met. He also...
Keep in mind, right there, it says former rivals, because this is after the primary.
So it's literally saying that they met.
Topics of discussion.
For a day and a half, the mainstream media engaged in a wild goose chase, trying to find out where Hillary and Obama had gone. Three cover stories later, the corporate press had to admit they had no idea where the two candidates had gone.
They weren't candidates anymore. Obama was the candidate. Alex is trying to present and muddy the timeline to insinuate that the two of them were still in the running when Obama had already won the nomination. And the reason for that is Alex believes that you go to Bilderberg and then the world elites decide who's
anoint
running.
Anoint you.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
So
yeah.
In order for that narrative to play out, he has to
they
present
both
the
had
idea.
To be candidates at the time.
Otherwise.
And then they were chosen using the golden dog who runs
exactly.
towards
no,
whoever
that octopus in the tank.
The octopus in the tank. Yeah. That's a great one.
The reason that he has to do that is because if you have the knowledge that Obama had already won the nomination beforehand, then they're not choosing who won. He won based on the votes in the primaries.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. The argument falls apart. So he tries to maintain that facade throughout this entire documentary, which is
silly.
Bullshit. I would say bullshit. You say silly, I say bullshit. Silly.
And to this day, Clinton and Obama aren't talking.
Plenty of sources knew about this meeting, told us and others that it was at Hillary Clinton's house, but clearly it wasn't.
In 2008, the trail led us to the Westfields Marriott Hotel.
No, it didn't.
Right outside
Washington,
D.C.
The trail of Obama and Hillary didn't lead you there. You were going there because you know that Bilderberg is there. You were going to go yell into bullhorns no matter what.
Yeah, but even then, what trail?
None.
Like, no. What you should have said is, we went to this Marriott.
That is exactly what he said.
There's no trail. Like, it wasn't like Obama left a series of breadcrumbs.
Also, do you remember we covered an episode in 2008 where Alex was getting ready to go to this Bilderberg?
Yeah.
Like, he had found out that Bilderberg was going to be in Virginia.
Yeah,
so he started
prank calling
the Marriott.
Yeah, I remember that.
God, I want to find that episode again. That was so funny.
We just flew into Washington, D.C. We're driving to the Westfields Marriott. Tomorrow, the hotel's closed throughout the week and in the weekend for the Bilderberg group meeting. We're going to check in the night before. They're going to kick us out tomorrow.
Holy shit. So he looks so much more healthy now than he does now.
Yeah, what a difference
decade
makes.
He looks disgusting now, but he looks all right back then.
He looks like...
He's heavier, but...
He looks like a rough 30-ish guy, but not like... He's 30-something?
Yeah.
Like, he's 34?
Yeah.
He is like, I get it.
Yeah.
But now, oh boy. But beyond...
He's a hard-drinking, hard-fighting Texan.
Beyond critiques of his physical stature or whatever, it's the nighttime, and he's saying, we're going to go check into this hotel because they're going to kick us out tomorrow for Bilderberg or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a very tight timeline on this.
At least 5 spy agencies, CIA, Defense Intelligence, Mossad... European Union security.
whatever.
We checked into the Westfields Marriott 48 hours before hotel guests were scheduled to be thrown out ahead of the annual meeting.
Or...
how does that work?
We're no longer reserved.
He said he's going to kick... they're going to kick us out tomorrow because of the Bilderberg conference.
Yeah, because of the length of time reservations.
48 hours. We're checking in 48 hours before, so that's 2 days. Yeah. What is it? It doesn't make sense. It's internally inconsistent.
It's also a way of describing, like, okay, so I reserved a room at a hotel for a week.
Mm-hmm.
Like, technically, I suppose you could say at the end of that week they kicked me out.
Yeah, you could do that.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, what? What? So I can't just stay longer than my reservation?
You're at a bar.
Are you saying that other people reserved it for the rooms? Whatever.
You're at a bar doing happy hour, and at 9 o'clock, there's a private party. Yeah. So they tell people to leave. Yeah. I got kicked out. Well, kind of, but.
I guess.
Yeah, you would have liked to stay longer, but.
They did tell you in advance.
You knew.
Like, when you got there, they were like, by the way, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
The building was nestled in the heart of the military-industrial complex.
You don't say, in Virginia, near D.C.?
Nah,
holy shit.
Come on.
With the National Reconnaissance Office and Raytheon just a stone's throw away.
Look at this B-roll. This is a nice hotel.
That's a pretty solid...
This is terrible B-roll.
That's a pretty solid breakfast arrangement.
The plan tonight is to try to not get arrested, dodge the security, get in there, get some footage of the elite arriving in the morning because some arrive before they officially lock it down, and then getting out of the building. Mm-hmm. That's our plan. I'm also going to be getting a call by an international syndicated radio show, Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie, and all week he's getting briefings from me every night about things as they develop.
The continental breakfast isn't that great.
George, we're sitting here in the room.
There is no one on the other end of that phone. There is no one on the other end of that phone. Fuck you. He is talking into a landline right now, and there is nobody on the other end of that line.
No.
There is zero people on the other end of that line.
If you're calling into a radio show, it is smart to call from a landline. I'm not going to take that away.
No, I'm not saying that he didn't call in. I'm not saying that it's not a good idea to talk on a landline. What I am saying is that for this shot in particular, there was no one on the other end of that phone.
And he has lights set up.
Yeah.
Like it's a setup shot.
No.
Holding. I know this is a setup. They timed it exactly when this happened. Open the door. I want him to hear the fire alarm. Open the door. I want people to hear this live to the 16 million people listening.
Vuvuzelas!
George, do you hear that? Now, they're going to use this as an excuse. The Westfields Marriott, right outside D.C. in Chantilly,
Place.
They want to use this to flush us out of here. They're very upset. Everybody that covers Bilderberg, I was detained 2 years ago, interrogated, screamed at. Bilderberg was upset about me, wanted to stop us. This is guaranteed. Everywhere we go, we're followed. We have another hotel across town as a base of operations. They were there.
What?
Questioning us, getting in our faces. We're being followed.
Huh?
I need everybody's support right now.
Why do you have another hotel?
They may have tried to concoct this in some way to say, you know, look, they didn't leave during a fire drill, assessing me, knowing I would stay into the interview.
That's not a crime.
But again, the moment the phone
I mean, it's
rang,
a crime.
Tom Danheiser, the moment
in some
the
ways.
Phone rang, the guys answered it. I'm standing there. The alarm goes off. It's going off right now. The guests are exiting the hotel out there.
Of course, smart of them.
Fire.
What's the shirt say?
Absolutely insane. I noticed, too, that there was over 100 security people here today, but tonight we got back, and it was a total ghost town, and this is what's insane. We have a security
this
guy
town,
who walked up to us 30 minutes ago, about 25 minutes
like
ago,
a ghost town.
Before this happened, and said, what are you guys doing? We said, we're just walking around checking out the artwork in the hotel.
There's the shot of the artwork.
We're admiring
That's true.
Them. We're also going around getting some footage. And,
of the artwork.
Cameras allowed. We said, fine. And then he said, yeah, we had somebody do a fire alarm a few weeks ago, and my camera got wrong. Why is he telling us about a fire alarm? I forgot that part, George. These bastards have done this. I don't know how. They're planning to try to set us up or something, but this is incredible. We are here in the middle of this right now, George.
So this is Alex calling into Coast to Coast AM and spinning
ostensibly
a marvelous yarn.
Ostensibly calling it.
I have a lot of problems with this.
Okay.
This entire story.
Yeah.
So Alex claims that the fire alarm started just as the phone rang, but according to the footage that we just saw there, start in media res with the call with the fire alarm already going. Based on his track record, I don't trust Alex Jones unless he proves something. And if he's out here filming himself at this hotel, staking out Bilderberg, I find it entirely implausible that he wasn't recording when he started making the call or when the fire alarm started. So that to me is suspicious number one. Suspicious number two, how's a fire alarm going to flush Alex Jones out? It's not like if you leave your room during a fire alarm, you're checked out of the hotel. If it's a situation where the globalists know he's in the hotel but don't know which room he's in, so they have to pull the fire alarm to get him out in the open, how in control are the globalists really? They can't pressure a goddamn hotel manager to say where Alex Jones is. He literally said, everywhere we go, we're being followed. So they know what room he's in. This doesn't mean anything. Alex has a backup hotel where he was harassed by globalists, but naturally, no footage of that anywhere to be found. Weird. And also, what kind of setup can they pull by pulling the fire alarm and, like, he doesn't leave? Like, what kind of setup is that?
Oh.
It's not a crime not to leave your room during a fire alarm. It's fucking stupid.
They pulled the alarm.
Look. He has no footage of that security guard that came up and told him people have been pulling fire alarms.
No. Nope.
So that seems like suspicious.
Which, based on his own description, we were filming at that time.
We saw the footage of the artwork.
Yep.
We saw that. You would think that there would be a piece of
the
footage.
They couldn't get him to sign off.
No.
They couldn't get him to sign the release.
You would still have the footage of someone off camera saying, what are you doing? That sort of thing that would lend credibility to your story. Alex Jones is the sort of person who needs to put that in or else his story is so super fucking suspect.
Right. Also, look, if I ran a hotel and Alex Jones walked in, I would immediately have him followed around.
Probably.
For no like nefarious reason so much as like, hey, I just need people to follow you around because you have a long and varied history of fucking with people, and that's not how I want my operation to be run. Could you please not fuck with people? Thanks.
Yeah, definitely. So my assessment of this is that what we're looking at here is a guy who's trying to come up with a story on the spot.
Yeah.
Like, same with Estelin. The improv skills are going. Like, Alex had nothing, but because the Marriott is just a normal hotel with nothing suspicious going on. So when he got on the phone with George Norrie, he had zero to report. We walked around. We saw some art. That's about it. There's nothing. That's a boring appearance on Coast to Coast AM. Maybe by coincidence, the fire alarm went off, or maybe one of Alex's crew pulled it. I have no way of knowing. But whatever the case, now Alex has the ingredient he needs to avoid talking about the lack of anything substantive happening. Now he can portray himself as the brave reporter who's out there whose life is in peril, who's also the victim of a grand conspiracy.
Of course.
Of fire alarm pulling.
Of course.
So now, incidentally, I found the audio of the next day's episode of Coast to Coast AM. Where Alex is talking about this with George Norrie.
Yeah.
And some of his story starts to change a little bit.
Oh.
Now, in the clip that
there
we just heard.
There are three globalists in a hot tub.
there is multiplying people. That's
okay.
For sure.
All right.
In that clip that we just heard, from Alex's Obama deception documentary, what we heard is a story about one guard coming up to him when he's trying to take pictures for B-roll. He's trying to create, just getting pictures of the artwork and what have you. Now let's hear what he says the next day on Coast to Coast AM.
Washington, D.C. area, the Bilderberg Conference, it was supposed to get underway today, did it? Let's check in with our own Alex Jones. Alex, you safer today?
George, I am, and thank God that you're having me on the show because we're in a lot of danger, and I've never said this before, even when I was detained for 15 hours in Canada covering it 2 years ago. I want to point out you are the only large commercial mainstream show. In fact, no one, no newspapers, nothing is covering it but your radio show with 16 million listeners and then my smaller news websites, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com.
Alex is saying that he's smaller than somebody.
Right now.
Interesting.
Right now. Give him a year or two.
Tonight, for 3 minutes before you went to me, right when you called, an alarm went off, the fire alarm. And the reason I was so upset is that walking up 10 minutes before, maybe 12 minutes before, two security walk up to us and they say, hey, have you heard of people pulling fire alarms? They like to do that to rob places. And I said, well, that's a strange story. Thank you. And
as soon as
this happened, I'm waiting on hold. Tom called, your producer, right as the alarm went off. when I'm back in the room, I'm thinking, what's going on? I had an independent film channel crew in there filming all of
that
this
explains
while
the
it's happening. The fire alarm is going off. Everything's crazy. And then
it seemed like everybody was walking out in an orderly fashion, by the way.
Hundreds of the guests who had to be out early this morning, and then Bilderberg did happen. They did arrive. We can get into that. It's incredible what happened. It got even crazier. Nothing like this has ever happened to me. We go downstairs. We're standing out there with over 200 people, and they walk up to us, the security, and say, we are going to F you up. And then they said, that goes for you, Alex, and you, Rob. Well, the hotel wasn't under my name. Rob is one of my camera guys, unknown.
Rob Dew.
They knew
Rob
our names. That
famous
freaked us
now.
Out. We got up early this morning, videotaped. Marines coming in.
So that's all you really need to hear there from that. It might actually be Rob Jacobson. I'm not entirely sure. There's two Robs in Alex's world at this point.
There's
so
a couple Robs.
That's entirely possible. But so now what we have is the evolution of this narrative. First, it was one security guard who came up to him and said, you know, something about fire alarms. And now we have two security guards.
One could have just been a random guy. Once you got two security guards in there, that's a conspiracy.
Right. So there's that. Which is, that's a problem for me. When the story changes, with basic facts.
Especially that quickly.
Yeah, a little bit. I think you just,
that was right out the gate at the beginning of the story.
Needed to make it a little bit more suspicious, so you added a dude.
Yeah.
That's not good. So now he also said in that interview the next day with George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM that after the alarm was going off, he finished his interview with George and then they left and a security guard came up to them and said, I'm going to fuck you up, Rob. Alex, there's footage of them leaving for the fire alarm. They don't have footage of any of this stuff.
Oh, they don't?
No.
That's odd.
There's a fire truck.
I'm gonna fuck you up, Rob.
Was that the truck talking?
That was the truck talking.
Also,
it's a transformer. I'm sorry, it's a Autobot.
Here's footage of them leaving. Being outside, there's Alex right there outside. No one's fucking with him. There's a guy in a robe.
Also, not chaos. Everybody's just kind of hanging around.
Nope.
There's a fire engine.
So now we're on to the next morning. They had footage of them outside. They had multiple cameras with them when they left. If all that is true, then they would have footage of them being threatened by a guard.
Couldn't get them to sign the release.
But they would have the camera down and use the audio then. You can still do that.
Also, if it is a scheduled fire drill.
I don't know if it was. I'm not sure of that.
Fire department usually doesn't show up.
That's not true necessarily.
That's not true necessarily, but if it is a scheduled fire department, usually you call ahead.
Bro,
or a scheduled fire
bro,
Coast drill.
To Coast AM is on at like midnight.
Right,
there's no
right,
way
right.
there's a fire drill that they plan
right.
at that hour.
Right.
That's a shit hotel.
So what is more likely?
Someone pulled the alarm.
What is more likely? One of the shadowy conspiratorial globalists pulled the fire alarm in order to specifically get Alex out.
Which doesn't do anything.
Because he was going to leave anyways.
And doesn't scare anybody. So if the globalists did that.
So who has motive?
Well, the globalists don't, because if they did that, all they've done is hand Alex a narrative on a silver platter that he gets to use to pretend he's oppressed and a victim and he's brave.
So what you're saying is that Alex has the most to gain from
Alex
this fire alarm
like
being
pulled.
Alex
does like to say qui bono all the time. Yeah. Who benefits?
Yep.
Rob Jacobson or Rob Dew, whichever the Rob was.
Whichever Rob.
Because they just got play on Coast to Coast AM, which is a much bigger thing than Alex at this point. They just got promoted.
Yeah. So they pulled the fire alarm.
So anyway, the next morning.
Smoking gun. Back to the left. Is that Dave Chappelle?
No.
I didn't know he used to run security for the Bilderberg Group.
Let's get out of here now, Richard. Let's go around.
They have checked out of the hotel, and they're acting like they're running out of the place.
Yeah. All right, we paid our bill. Exactly right. Let's get out of here.
Just the way out.
So now this is a car that they're going to pretend is following them. Now, if you pay close attention, this is clearly a silver car. Later, they will pretend that it is the same thing as a very clearly bluish-green car with a similar build. There's no doubt about that.
Uh-huh.
But I don't believe it's the same car.
Right now, you are Joe Pesci and my cousin Vinny, my friend.
Thank you.
So far, no evidence of following.
We got a car right behind us.
You do have a car behind you, yes.
You made about, what, five turns and six turns, the same car's following us?
Alex has the camera going in his car and doesn't show the five turns that were taken by this car. It is just Alex saying he followed us for five turns or whatever. Now, pay attention.
What? What, are they going to the same Olive Garden we are?
You're very close.
Now he looks like he's following us into a... He came out of Bilderberg. He came out of the Westfield.
He's being a little bit subtle, but...
Not too.
It doesn't look like the same car.
There he is. That's him over there in the blue green, car.
Yeah. In the blue car. Gotcha.
This is just a guy.
That's the most just a guy.
He doesn't have a gun.
That is just a guy.
He's just going into this Moe's Southwestern Grill. This doesn't prove anything. This doesn't prove they were being followed.
Also, he's not. Look, either he's incredible as a tail,
right,
which he wouldn't be if they noticed him immediately.
Uh-uh.
Or he's incredible as a secret agent because he's just walking in almost as if he has no idea who is around him.
Super nonchalant.
No.
Just wants some shitty food.
Yeah, and he's not.
This is zero, man. This is nothing.
No, that's nothing.
This is Alex trying to create some sort of narrative that he was being followed and stuff like that. When it's I believe there's a world that exists where someone staying at the Marriott wanted shitty Mexican food.
Yep.
And went to this Moe's. I don't know how far away that is from the Marriott. Alex didn't demonstrate that. If he was being followed, he had multiple cameras in the car. They would have footage of all of that.
Of the third entire...
turn, the third turn, he would be taping like, oh my God, this guy keeps following us.
Yep.
Wouldn't that bolster his argument?
No, they were like, oh my God, this is a similar car.
Oh my God, that looks very similar.
I'm colorblind.
We're being followed.
It's blue. No, it's silver.
He doesn't look back or anything.
Nope.
We're headed back to the Marriott here in Chicago.
And then they're just allowed to leave like there's no problem.
2008, who successfully infiltrated the last day and a half inside, got out with some great stuff.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, they got out with some great stuff.
A picture of a painting?
They got out with some great stuff.
We did a great set piece on Coast to Coast AM. Great stuff.
That was great stuff.
Great stuff. So, I'll be honest.
I mean, by their standards, they did get out with some great stuff.
I'll be honest. I don't have a lot to say about the next stretch of this documentary.
Let's just enjoy.
In my notes, it just says, this stretch is meaningless.
We've been tailed, and now we're going back to cover the dignitaries, the elitist, as they arrive. And right now is the prime time for them to start arriving for the next 3 or 4 hours. We took about a 30-minute break. I'm sure we missed a few, but it doesn't matter. We've got scores of people that just organically are listeners, info warriors that are out here taking action.
We have, hold on, let me count.
About 25.
Let me count how many scores of people they have so
far.
About
25 or so.
I'm going to go with
30 tops.
One score, Dan.
Put the violins back.
One score, people.
Diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-didd Cars appearing.
For the next 3 days, while you...
He's going with the classic double bullhorn technique.
Tyranny Crusher 2.5 and 2.75.
Try to chart the future of our destiny. We're taking our destiny.
Hold on. So this is a meeting that happened, like, while they were in the car. He was like, okay, so I'm going to take a bullhorn out.
No.
I'm going to scream at it. Rob Dew is right there next to him going like, whoa, dude, this is a documentary. You pull out the double bullhorn or you fucking go home.
Can you imagine how much more powerful it is when you speak into two bullhorns?
I'm going to go with not.
Do you see how far away the building is from him? Like, you can't cover that distance with one bullhorn, asshole.
I really don't think that's how it works, though.
It's not.
I think both bullhorns amplify at the exact same amount.
It would... Still, no one can hear him except, like, a wah-wah-wah-wah.
It's not like they... If anything, they probably interfere with each other, and it makes the sound less clear.
He's very far.
Less clear.
If you look at this shot here, he's very far away from the building.
He looks like he's in a suburb.
I think, yeah, I mean, Chantilly isn't,
No, I mean, like, a suburb at a different Marriott. Yeah, exactly.
Our masters!
Yeah!
We witnessed at least seven convoys.
Baba Booey!
Secret Service.
So they have video of seven convoys of a bunch of people coming in, and they show close-ups of people.
Yeah.
None of the people that they talk about in the documentary.
This would be a great time to play Convoy.
Entering the Westfields Marriott, and internal sources confirm.
Well, we got a little old convoy.
Did attend at least one meeting inside the conference.
Hey!
So Alex says that internal sources confirm that Obama and Hillary attended one meeting, but that's just Daniel Estulin telling him that. That's not official. They weren't there. There's no evidence that they were there. The official record doesn't show that they were there. Alex has no proof that they were there. He's videotaping people going in and out of it. He doesn't have any footage of Obama or Hillary being there. There's nothing. It's just Daniel Estulin lying about shit.
Anyway. Magic.
While the Bilderberg Group was 100% successful in 2008 at keeping their name out of the mainstream media,
not true.
Not fair as well.
Not true.
When it came to the exploding independent press.
Oh, that one has a B on it.
During the Entire Today event, anti-New World Order protesters and alternative media encircled the hotel.
You're being exposed everywhere. From David Rockefeller, from
this guy in the striped suit.
He looks like he's 14.
That's C.W. McCall.
Oh, okay. So C.W. McCall is 14.
Singing Great Old Convoy.
Okay.
No, that's Luke Radowski. He's the one of the guys behind and one of the main players in We Are Change.
Name. Yeah.
That grew out of the Ron Paul campaign.
Right.
I wanted to do...
definitely not an 11-year-old racist wearing a pinstripe suit.
I wanted to talk a lot about Luke
that
Radowski.
That does not fit.
I looked into him, though, and I'm not confident in a lot of the claims that are made about him.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of people who have made accusations that he embezzled tons of money from We Are Change.
Right.
And was using it basically as his personal bank account. But because of he never was charged with it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Some of these people have like bank receipts and stuff that they've posted.
Uh-huh.
I don't know enough about it. And for me to make that kind of accusation would be irresponsible. So I'm going to punt on Luke Radowski, with the exception of saying, a lot of people think he was up to no good.
Right.
John Edwards from Bill Clinton, your game of secrecy. It's over!
You're not playing any game! It's up close!
This is Bernanke, man! Bernanke, you're going down!
He did. He resigned. He was out. You know?
Yeah, you got him.
Obama, we know you're here, Obama.
I don't know who this lady is.
She seems nice.
We know you're in Virginia!
Arch criminal!
Purchase a DVD copy of the Obama Deception.
There's a scroll that keeps going under the video. Yeah.
Brave Americans came from all over the United States and bullhorned the main conference hall at close range as the global power brokers schemed inside.
And that solved everything.
I'm amazed by why this is still happening.
Criminal.
They're, this is not a, like, are they, is he making a point? Is he saying that, like, the people are coming together to stop them?
The global elite are desperate.
I don't get what he's accomplishing here. By replaying Endgame!
The population discovers that policy is being developed covertly by powerful special interest. The people will revolt.
Hey, it's Big Jim Tucker.
Under federal law, our federal officials to have
is Tucker dead by now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
World policy with non-federal workers.
Jim Tucker walking through the lobby of a hotel, being bothered not at all.
When you said, "Is he dead?" I don't think he's dead at this point, but he is when we're recording this.
Oh
now.
Yeah, no, he's dead now.
Yeah.
I think he was
still alive when he was making, because that's a new interview, though, or at least it wasn't an Endgame.
Right.
Doesn't mean it was
as
new.
Opposed to the rest of this B-roll.
Also, he's misrepresenting the Logan Act.
Right.
Everybody from the...
I was the one where Wolverine died at the end, right?
You know, you bet.
Show up, as they always do. They're committing a criminal act simply by being here to attend a secret meeting with officials from other countries to discuss U.S. policy in the world.
Prove any of that.
So, literally, it's a criminal act.
This is my favorite shot of this entire documentary, right here.
Yeah,
you have
this
Alex
is great.
Jones in a black shirt, black button-up shirt,
yeah.
Sunglasses, flanked by old man Jim Tucker in his silly lounging by the pool hat and his suspenders. He just—it looks like the sort of young guy is, you know, he's the guy who's like, I'm muscle and I'm here to back up this old man who's the oracle, who's like, I am feeble in body, but I am great in wisdom. Like, he's, Alex is charging in with like, I will defend this old man, telling that it looks like something out of a bad movie. It just is amazing.
He
to be.
Looks,
this
Jim
picture
Tucker,
tells a thousand words.
Tucker right now looks a little bit like a private eye in a 50s movie. Mm-hmm. Like that is, that he's wearing the suspenders, he's got the tie, and he's got the silly hat on top of it.
He's
like,
modeled himself that way.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, but this
Elmore
is,
Leonard is a huge fan of Tucker.
Yes. He's the archetype of all, Leonard protagonists. But I could stare at this for hours. There's so much here. There's just...
What's important to note is that while there is so much metaphorically there,
there's nothing
there are
there.
Like eight guys.
No substance.
Like, it is not a giant march. It is not a great... It's like a few dudes getting together. Some people go bowling on the weekends. These guys protest Bilderberg or whatever.
Right. And everything they're saying is made up and
complete.
They don't understand the
law. Absolute bullshit.
And every newspaper, every broadcaster has a patriotic duty to expose these scum and the evil they project.
You write for a publication that was created to demonize Jews. Don't tell the media their obligations.
Everybody's obligation.
The election primary served as a great diversion while the true future course of the nation was being set by...
The primary was over before Bilderberg.
All right, now.
Closed doors.
1 second. Based on the still shot that they showed before this, which was, I think it was,
Obama
and Hillary at a debate.
Yeah, I think so.
And they had it shot.
It might have
been
highly stylized.
Yeah, no, it was shot from an angle where it looked like Hillary was looking at Obama with kind of like this side eye of like, fuck you, man. The only thing I could think during that though is, I bet Obama could pull off an earring. Mm. I really think he should get an earring.
Now that he's out of office.
Now that he's out of an office, man, he should really fucking go for it.
He didn't wear the flag pin for a while and everyone, he wore a tan suit and everyone was mad at him.
Do you remember those times?
Yeah.
Those were good times whenever a flag pin was the issue.
Imagine if he had a fucking earring.
Not a fucking
I'm just saying, imagine if he had an earring. He couldn't pull it off then.
Oh my God.
Maybe pull it off, but not in politics.
Oh, he could absolutely pull it off. He'd look great.
You got, obviously, the Bilderberger Group,
Webby.
And then we have the Crypt Keeper,
Bernard of Holland. You've got the Trilateral Commission, founded by David Rockefeller's Zbigniew Brzezinski. They're the ones who ran administration. Everybody in the Carter administration, from Carter and Mondale and Volcker and Brzezinski, were all members of the Trilateral Commission.
You just hated
Founding
Carter,
member
dude.
Of rap sensation Public Enemy. Professor Griff gave us his view of
right.
the Obama
all
phenomenon.
All right,
Barack
of course.
Obama's been
why wouldn't Professor Griff? Well, yeah, I'm out. I'm out. I'm done.
I truly believe imperialism and fascism.
Where even are you guys?
I actually do know where they are, because in order to get this interview, Alex had to have the guy who owns this bookstore on his show.
Okay.
So the guy who owns this bookstore, it's a black nationalist bookstore.
Okay.
He was a friend of Professor Griff's, and that's how Alex Jones got in touch with him.
Right.
And was
right,
able
right.
to do this interview.
Right.
So they did this in this guy.
Is in
I can't
Austin.
Remember the name of it. No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Maybe it is. I'm not entirely sure exactly where it is. He called into the show, so I'm not sure if it's in Austin. I don't think Alex is even there for this interview. I think that they just taped Professor Griff saying shit and sent the video to Alex.
Do you know what would be a great fucking documentary for Alex to do?
What's that?
Just all the tertiary members of so many hip-hop groups just giving their political opinions.
Or,
I would watch the shit out of that documentary.
I mean, KRS-One was very important.
I'm not talking about KRS-One.
Okay, I thought you meant
And I'm not saying that Professor Griff is not an integral member of... I am.
I would say a better documentary for Alex to do, like, late career is revisit all the people he's listened to and wrestle with why it was a bad idea to listen to them. I would pay to watch that documentary.
I want to hear him talk to Inspector Deck.
Oh, not tertiary.
I didn't say he was tertiary. God damn it.
And the facelift is going to have to be black. And the reason why I believe that, simply because I think they're trying to go into Africa. Well, they're already in Africa.
Yep.
But they want to totally control all the natural minerals.
Oh, really?
They're going to need to carry them.
Never heard of white people doing that shit before.
22nd and 23rd centuries. Mm-hmm. Are you following me? So
I'm following you.
They have to go through a phase of galvanizing the masses of dark-skinned people that truly believe that change needs to come, but the change that they're talking about is not necessarily change for the better as far as the masses of the people. It's probably a better change for them. It's not going to change for us, the little man on the totem pole. And no one looks at the agenda.
No,
long as he positions himself right, have the right tie on, have the right smile.
Not a tan suit, though.
Repeats the slogans over and over and drives it home. The average
Professor
American
Griff, brought to you by PrisonPlanet.com.
And we don't even know what the agenda is.
So, suffice it to say, I think that analysis is weak as fuck. First off, where is Professor Griff getting the idea that colonialist powers haven't been completely plundering Africa for centuries?
Hold on. Who could say that?
They don't fucking need a one world government or a black president in the United States. The world has been abusing Africa pretty much forever.
You say that, but then you don't even take into account Rhodesia.
Well, considering what the British did to South Africa for gold and diamonds.
No, come on.
Or what the Belgians did to the Congo for ivory and rubber.
Those were tiny hiccups.
Or what the Germans did to Namibia for, I don't know, power, I guess. I don't think
they were just being German.
I don't think that the concept of an African Union, this possible idea, it could possibly be any worse than what colonialism has already inflicted on the continent.
No.
So now for Professor Griff,
colonialism is great.
I think that he's expressing a dumb idea. It seems to not take into account the last couple hundred years. But I don't think he's a real professor.
What?
I think I have some suspicions he's not a professor. So while Public Enemy made some great music.
Yeah, now, at the same time, what's his fuck?
Webster Tarpley?
Mustache-less Wilford Brimley.
What, Jim Tucker?
Webster Tarpley.
Oh, Webster Tarpley.
He has a PhD.
Right.
And he's somehow saying even worse nonsense than Professor Griff. So who deserves professorship?
Sure. I'll give him the honorific of professor. But, look, they've made some great music, Public Enemy. There's no doubt about that.
Yep.
But a lot of the things that Professor Griff has said in interviews are deeply problematic.
Okay.
And more so than just the things that we know, like offhand.
All right. All right.
So in 1988, he told British publication The Face, quote, "There's no place for gays. When God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, it was for that sort of behavior." In another media interview with a British publication, he said, quote, "The white race or Caucasian race came from the Caucasus Mountains. It was not black people who made it with monkeys, animals, and dogs, but it was white people." He went on to say, quote, "They say the white Jews build the pyramids. Shit. The Jews can't even build houses that stand up nowadays. How the hell did they build the pyramids?" Finally,
if that weren't so hilariously racist, I would be against it.
Finally, he came to the end of his thought by saying, quote,
"Racist ass bullshit thing to say.
If the Palestinians took up arms, went into Israel and killed all the Jews, it'd be all right." Not great. Not great. Not great.
Some problems. As someone who likes to take extreme positions vis-a-vis genocide,
yeah.
Even I'm not for that one.
Yeah. These statements were made all
the Palestinians
killed all the Jews.
Just killed all the Jews. I don't think
it would be all right.
I don't think he is a fan of Jews. I don't think he's a fan of Jews.
So these statements were made in British magazines. So they went largely unnoticed and everything was A-OK for a bit. Asked about Professor Griff's comments by a writer for Spin magazine, Chuck D said, quote, "I back Griff. Whatever he says, he can prove." Then Spike
Chuck
Lee.
Chuck D heard the things that
no,
Professor
he
Griff
knew what
said.
He said.
No shit.
Yeah.
Oh fuck.
But then Spike.
Chuck D's an anti-Semite too.
No, he just didn't want trouble.
Oh, okay.
So then Spike Lee featured their song.
Wait, he didn't want trouble, so he agreed with the anti-Semitic shit
because
that
he thought it would blow over.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
So then Spike Lee featured their song "Fight the Power" in his movie "Do the Right Thing," and Public Enemy was a hot commodity. Everyone was interested in them, which unfortunately led to a 1998 interview with the Washington Post, where Professor Griff said, quote, "Jews are responsible for the majority of the wickedness that goes on around the globe." That's the quote that most people remember. Unfortunately, he said way more than that in that interview. He went on a full-on anti-Semitic screed and cited Henry Ford's book, The International Jew, as a source.
God damn it! Professor Griff is a Pez dispenser?
You bet.
God damn it!
He dared the Jews to, quote, "send their faggot little hitmen after him," in that interview, which is
not great. I think he's really trying to complete the cycle.
He's batting for the cycle.
He's going for all of it.
Yep. He said that Jews gave black people AIDS and concluded that, quote, "he must be speaking the truth because if he wasn't, the Jew who owned CBS would have since forced him out of the group.
It takes a nation of the five Jew bankers to hold us back, yeah. I believe is the working title of that album.
I'm not sure if it was the Jew who owned CBS who did it, but Griff was pretty quickly fired as Public Enemy's Minister of Information. He is the Minister of Information. That was his title in the group.
Hey, you know what? He could still be a representative in Iowa.
20 years later, Professor Griff wrote a book called Analytics, spelled A-N-A-L-Y-T-I-X-Z.
Love it.
Where he gave this rambling explanation for his actions. Quote, "To say the Jews are responsible for the majority of wickedness that went on around the globe, I would have to know about the majority of wickedness that went around the globe, which is impossible. I'm not the best knower. God is. Then,
ooh,
not only knowing that, I would have to know who is at the crux of all the problems in the world, and then to blame the Jewish people, that's not correct."
But
that is a non-apology apology.
What did he just say?
I don't know.
Did he just say, "Nah, you can't believe me and judge me for saying that, because I don't know, and you don't know. God knows."
Basically what he's saying is God knows the Jews are behind this, but I was wrong to say that. I don't know all that. That's kind of the feeling I get.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Also in his book, it's unclear if he ever apologized for his comments about the, quote, "faggot little hitmen."
It was a different time.
Sure.
People threw around anti-gay slurs a lot more.
All this doesn't really matter because he pretended to be sorry and he made a visit to the Holocaust Museum and it all did kind of blow over, with the exception of that Jews are responsible for the wickedness comment.
Right.
That everyone still remembers. The rest of that stuff, everyone's kind of like, meh. Also, I mean, because he did all that and it blew over, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2013 with Public Enemy reinstalled as their Minister of Information.
People grow and change.
How crazy is that?
People grow and change, Dan.
Yeah.
Jesus, that's weird.
Beyond that,
you know what? I'm going to put that low on my list of things that are bad about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Sure. I'm not here to talk about the hall.
that's a problem. That's not even in the top 10 of worst things about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, if you want to go line by line on bands.
They do have some systemic problems.
Yeah.
But beyond all that, Professor Griff is a follower of Louis Farrakhan and espouses deeply anti-white sentiment. He's basically the archetype of a black racist that Alex complains about all the time, and yet here he is presented as an expert in Alex Jones's documentary.
Yeah, but he's the black racist who's on his team right now.
I guess. He's the one who also believes in the New World Order, but very clearly thinks it's Jews.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't want to talk about that.
Nah, come on.
Anyway.
What is it with people and the Jews?
What?
Leave them alone!
Nah, can't.
Book with no apologies, Senator Barry Goldwater said, "The Trilateral Commission is intended to be the vehicle for multinational consolidation of the commercial and banking interest by seizing control of the political government of the United States. The Trilateral Commission represents a skillful, coordinated effort to seize control and consolidate the four centers of power, political, monetary, intellectual, and ecclesiastical. What the Trilateral Commission intends is to create a worldwide economic power superior to the political governments of the nation states involved. As managers and creators of the system, they will rule the future."
That they just showed what is essentially the globe
from Mystery Science Theater.
From Superman.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
So this is a Barry Goldwater quote from his book with no apologies. I don't really care. I don't trust Barry Goldwater. So I mean, I believe he said that, but I don't give a shit.
Sure.
I straight don't give a shit.
Pass.
So Barry Goldwater, you know about Barry Goldwater?
I know enough about Barry Goldwater.
You don't
Goldwater.
Know any of the stuff I'm about to tell you about
I
Barry Goldwater.
I don't know any. Well, this is a non-Andrew Jackson situation.
Barry Goldwater was a five-term senator from Arizona who was, to put it mildly, batshit crazy.
Hey, no, they invented that rule where you're not allowed to say that he's batshit crazy.
So
all right.
Barry was born the son of parents who owned a department store called Goldwater's, which he would go on to take over after his father's death. Due to the store's success, his family had a comfortable wealth his entire life, bringing in an estimated $1 million a year as of 1941, which would be $17 million in present-day terms.
Doing all right.
He was pretty good in the 40s. This allowed Barry to pursue his own interests, which ended up being weird conservatism. In World War II, Barry joined the Air Force and flew supply runs. So it's pretty cool. He was very passionate about flying airplanes, and that went throughout a great part of his life. Then in 1952, he was elected to the U.S. Senate. Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped over something. I forgot to tell you that in 1939, Barry Goldwater started a national fad when he invented something called antsy pants, which were just men's underwear with big red ants printed on them.
All right. As of
he made so much money on antsy pants.
As of 1939, I am fine with Barry Goldwater. I assume that there are no other mitigating factors that happened later on in his life that I would perhaps
say
are bad.
Well, he got into the Senate in 1952. And yeah. So anyway, Barry went on to Congress, bringing with him antsy pants money and an already-
Barry Goldwater invented antsy pants? Yeah. A fad that continues to this day?
Does not continue to this day, I don't think. So he brought along that money and an already deeply entrenched opposition to labor unions. He hated the New Deal for that reason and had prior to running, for Senate, campaigned for Arizona to be a right-to-work state, where employees didn't have real rights. In 1963, Barry was a vociferous opponent of the Civil Rights Act, claiming it would infringe on property and states' rights. Naturally, that kind of thinking netted Barry the Republican nomination for president in 1964.
How things change.
President Eisenhower endorsed Goldwater, saying, quote, "I personally believe that Goldwater is not an extremist, as some people have made him. But in any event, we're all Republicans." That is not a ringing endorsement.
Ooh, how things change. Yeah. How different it is now, where we would never allow this kind of behavior.
Also, it's hard to square that idea that he's not an extremist with a campaign speech that Barry Goldwater gave, where he said that we should be using nuclear weapons just as liberally as conventional weapons in Vietnam. He went on to go so far as to suggest that field commanders should have the authority to use tactical nukes without the approval of the president. Even with the president signing off, that would be a crime against humanity.
I love how stupid people always think tactical nukes is like, oh, no, they're nukes that are like, it'll take down a guy. Like, no, dude, it's still gonna take down a 3 square mile, and then make 30,000 miles uninhabitable for the next 100 years.
Yeah, yeah. So you just flippantly say that things like that should be policy, which is very reminiscent of Donald Trump saying we should kill terrorists' families.
No, we would never allow, look, we voted down Barry Goldwater, so I assume that we would never allow somebody who says things like that to be president ever again.
So that same year, Facts magazine printed an article called "The Unconscious of a Conservative," a special issue on the mind of Barry Goldwater, a play on his book "The Conscience of a Conservative."
Yeah.
In that article, the writer said that Barry Goldwater was, quote, "severely paranoid personality who is unfit for office." Barry sued him for libel and won, thus creating the Goldwater rule, where media personalities steer away from criticizing the mental states of public personalities. Oh, sorry, I forgot to mention something. At this point, Barry Goldwater was also running a ham radio station out of his house. So
how did he lose? How did that guy lose that lawsuit?
It seems pretty crazy. He invented antsy pants and was running a ham radio station out of his house while he was a senator.
I feel like that makes you unfit for the office.
Crazy. So in the 1968 presidential campaign, Barry Goldwater backed Nixon, which is kind of strange. Like I mentioned earlier, a lot of Alex's other ideological ancestors were firmly on board with segregationist candidate George Wallace during that campaign. I don't know what to make of Barry's involvement with Nixon, but I should also tell you that in 1976, Goldwater was inducted into the International Swimming Hall of Fame.
You know, with guys like Goldwater, you never hear the positive things about him.
You didn't know he was a championship swimmer?
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Now that I know that, now I'm excited.
In 1968.
Maybe he was fit for office, Dan.
Physically.
He was fit for swimming.
Yeah. Goldwater finally retired from the Senate, and his seat was filled by none other than John McCain. In 1988, Barry endorsed George H.W. Bush for president, which is another weird choice for the people in this world. That might have had something to do with Barry being good friends with Bush's father, Prescott Bush, actual Nazi collaborator and war profiteer. So he was friends with Prescott Bush, who endorsed him when he ran for president.
Yeah.
Now he endorsed his son.
Nazis got to stick together, man.
Also, there was a great exchange that I found between him and John McCain about, like, Goldwater was like, "If I was in charge, you never would have been at that Hanoi Hilton. You never would have been a POW of the Vietnam if I had been in charge."
Yeah.
And McCain's response, I think, is nice and snappy. And it's like, "You're right. I would have been a prisoner of war of the Chinese, which is like, ooh, burn.
Nice.
Nice, McCain.
No, come on, McCain. No. You would have been dead. He would have nuked you forever.
Probably. So by 1993, a now retired 80-year-old man, Barry Goldwater, advocated for the creation of laws to protect homosexuals from discrimination and supported the right of homosexuals to openly serve in the military. All of this was because he found out that his grandson was gay.
Odd.
Even though he had previously been a vociferous opponent of the Civil Rights Act, all those sorts of things, he now encouraged federal legislation.
If only he had found out his fucking grandson was black. Christ, we could have had everything.
You understand how fucking stupid these people are? Like,
I do, Dan.
They're
Dan, I intimately understand how fucking stupid these people are.
Their principled positions.
I was born with them.
Their principled positions evaporate once it's like, oh my God.
It affects me? It affects me personally?
Which I'm still glad that he got there eventually, but I wish that he would be, I wish he'd have the wherewithal to when it would have made a difference. Like, in the 60s, he could have made a difference.
Yeah, but if his kid was gay in the 60s while he was in office, he still would have been anti-gay.
You bet. That's the problem.
That's these fucking guys.
So anyway, Barry Goldwater died in 1998, and he had his ashes scattered on the Colorado River. That's only.
He had his ashes scattered on the Colorado.
Which is only.
I was hoping it would be an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Nope. The Colorado River is a fitting place for his ashes because I forgot to tell you this. In 1940, Barry became the 71st person on record to ever travel the full length of the Colorado River.
Damn it, Barry Goldwater. Who are you?
He's crazy.
Who are you?
He's crazy. I mean, beyond that, he also is, like, responsible for a lot of this stupid anti-communist propaganda.
Yeah. No.
But because he's such a small part of this documentary, I'd rather celebrate the craziness of him, because it's way more fun. Anyway, rest in peace, Barry Goldwater, you crazy son of a bitch.
Bilderberg issues executive decisions and prime directives to its sub-directorates for implementation. The trial.
He just said that sentence doesn't mean.
I don't know. I didn't understand how those words.
Define your term.
I don't understand what any of those words mean in relation to each other.
No. Or outside of each other.
Yeah.
The Bilderberg Group agenda and executes it through regional roundtable groups throughout Europe, Asia, and the Americas. The Council on Foreign Relations serves as the managing roundtable group in the United States sector.
See, this is an attempt to explain it, but it doesn't.
The Council on Foreign Relations has dominated every administration since the days of FDR.
So there's Alex's sort of claim of everybody since FDR has been controlled by these people.
Yeah. Even JFK.
My problem here.
Which is why they killed him.
See, that's a problem.
Because he was too controlled by them.
Because Alex's timeline makes it seem that FDR would be controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations.
Right.
Whereas Webster Tarpley's would be like, he was free, he was the last real president.
Right.
And also,
Alex himself said earlier on in the documentary he was the last real president.
Or a real president can still be controlled by the Council on Foreign Relations. Maybe. That's implied by their language. Also, man, so, FDR came into office in 1932. The Council on Foreign Relations was started in 1921. So this implies that there was a good 11 years where they're just like, we can't do that yet.
Oh, yeah.
They came together as an evil group, but it took them 11 years to be able to.
They were in the planning stages.
You gotta get the kinks
out. No, you do pre-planning, you do a couple of test runs, and then you're ready.
So that means that, Warren G. Harding was.
I mean, it takes 6 years just to get catering set up.
Harding was elected in 1920, so maybe the CFR wasn't, like, in play.
Yeah.
But then after him, you had Coolidge. You know, Coolidge.
He was great.
Yeah.
Coolidge was famous for being a shitty president.
Well, no, actually, Coolidge took over because Warren G. Harding had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Coolidge took over, so the CFR probably had nothing to do with that, unless they caused the heart attack that killed Warren G. Harding.
Possible.
Which is possible.
Yeah, you can inject, they had things
blow
to
darts.
Cause heart attacks back then. Blow darts?
Yeah, absolutely.
Blow darts have been the last great tool of the globalists.
Indeed. So they killed Warren G. Harding. And then got Coolidge in charge, which I guess that's probably what they did. But that doesn't really make sense because Coolidge is remembered as a small government conservative, someone who just was entirely into laissez-faire international politics.
Yeah, Coolidge, set up the conditions for the Great Depression.
Oh, you bet.
And then Hoover got blamed. Fucking knocked him down, man.
He did a terrible job, but yeah, Coolidge deserves a lot more of the,
the
blame for it.
Yeah, they should have been called Coolidgevilles, but that's not as good as Hoovervilles.
Yeah.
So
then he took over for Harding, but then in 1924, 3 years after the CFR comes together, they probably got their shit working by now.
You would hope.
So then
the Great Depression comes, but knocks them out.
Not in 1924. You'd think they'd be able to control that election by then, but then Calvin Coolidge, a laissez-faire, small government type, ends up winning in 1924, too, so I guess they didn't control that election. And then Hoover wins in 1928, but he didn't want to use federal funding to help with the increasing problem that was happening with I don't know. I'm just trying to make sense of this, and
Here's my angle for you, all right? They orchestrated that in order to create the crisis necessary to do the shit that they wanted to do, was elect FDR in order to create the New Deal and usher in 40 years of pretty sustained economic growth.
And Glass-Steagall that works against the interests of the bankers.
Yeah,
that was
exactly.
passed while
that was
their guy FDR was in office. I mean, the reason that we ended up not having nearly as many financial crashes since the Great Depression onward, a large part of that was regulation.
Yeah, but regulation's bad.
But it was put in generally by FDR, who was supposed to be the guy that the CFR and the globalists put in. I don't understand any of this.
No.
It doesn't make sense.
No. The only thing that makes sense is everything that Alex says is wrong.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
The way in which they make policy and rule is that they are a polycentric oligarchical system. You have to be a finance oligarch. Remember, this is not a
society. Does that mean they marry multiple people?
Not by priests, not by bureaucrats, not by demagogues, none of those, but by bankers. Bankers rule, and the bankers set up these institutions. They set up things modeled on the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Chatham House, and the Milner Roundtable of the period right after the Boer War.
Here's my favorite
part
of that.
That all is still just taken from misrepresentations of Quigley.
I know, but when he gave specifics, I was like, the moment this list is done, Dan is going to pause this. I was like, oh shit, now we're going to get some information.
I've shown my hand a little bit too much. So, I mean, this is Webster Tarpley saying, just after Alex rambles about the CFR, he's saying this sort of stuff. So, I mean, pronoun reference would dictate that he must be talking about the CFR, right? I mean, you'd think. So, he's saying that the CFR isn't run by generals, priests, bureaucrats, or demagogues, but by bankers. The CFR's membership roles are public. And my friend, they're not even close to all bankers.
All right, let's see.
Just a few names you might recognize who are Council on Foreign Relations members who are not bankers.
Dave Mustaine.
Tom Brokaw. Colin Powell. Warren Beatty. Jimmy Carter. George Clooney. Jesse Dillon. That's Bob Dylan's son who directed How High. Sandra Day O'Connor. Priscilla Presley. Alex's beloved William F. Buckley. Ted Cruz's wife Heidi. Carl Sagan. And of course, let's not forget Alex's good buddy and manners coach, Steve Pachenik. These are all people who are members or have been members of the Council on Foreign Relations. Like, it's not something that's run by bankers. There's thousands of members of the Council on Foreign Relations. And while some of them are in banking or in finance, great majority of them aren't. If Webster Tarpley is not talking about the CFR, this documentary is a serious problem with editing.
I bet some of them are generals and the entire list of people that he's in.
Or demagogues?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
For
I bet
sure.
There are those on there, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even before World War I, you had the British setting up these roundtables, institutes with publications and conferences, and this is how they make policy.
Upon Obama's inauguration, members of the Bilderberg Group, Trilateral Commission, and CFR flooded into every position of power in the executive branch, replacing Trilateral Commission and CFR members who previously filled the positions during the Bush administration.
As I said earlier, there's no such thing as a member of the Bilderberg Group as much as there is a member of the steering committee, which those, you can find out who those people are.
Right.
Alex is saying that all these people flooded in. Of the 22 members of his cabinet, only 5 of them, Alex's people were CFR members. You got Robert Gates, who's a holdover from Bush, Eric Shinseki, Susan Rice, Janet Napolitano, and Tim Geithner.
Yeah.
Those are the only people who had any relation with the CFR that I can find.
Right.
In terms of the Trilateral Commission, there's a number of people who were former members, but they left when they got into public service, which we'll get into here in a little bit. But in terms of Bush's outgoing cabinet, you had Condoleezza Rice, Henry Paulson, Robert Gates, Elaine Chao. That's about all I can find in terms of the CFR membership rules. But it appears that at the end of Bush's term, there were four CFR members in his cabinet. And when Obama came in, there were five, and there were people in different positions. It's not like one member replaced another.
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem all that suspicious. It doesn't... I don't know. It just doesn't mean anything to me.
It doesn't mean anything to anyone.
No.
Except for people who have I think he might have some sort of
weird paranoia.
Could.
Could.
He might be gold watering right now.
Oh boy.
When you look at the US ruling class, you'd have to say that they're a really pathetic bunch of failures and bunglers.
Get their ass.
A miserable excuse for a ruling class.
Get
them. One of the big problems we have is you go from Clinton to Bush to Obama. What stays the same is the ruling elite that gives these puppets the orders that they act on. And these orders are wrong-headed, let's say, to say the least. They're basically bankrupt. They're going to lead to the collapse of this civilization. What they're doing
Fair.
Is using the existence of the United States as a formerly powerful nation state to act out their Wall Street fantasies of world domination and maintaining their capital structures and maintaining their system of looting. And this can't be done. So the basic question is, they've hijacked our country and you got to take it back from them. You've got to drive Wall Street out of the government, and at that point you'd have a reasonable chance of getting back to prosperity and some kind of peace and order in international affairs.
We have a lot of the stuff they say has a kernel of like yeah in it, but then the way they just, but if you it still would be true if you take it outside of the conspiratorial.
Exactly.
Like sort of framework.
Right.
And they don't offer any found, like, real solutions to anything. They just, like, oh, look at all these evil fucks.
Right. But that's the whole plan. The plan is to make the problem seem so insurmountable that there's no point in doing anything.
Right.
Their plan is to paralyze people.
Yes.
If you deal with it.
Sell gold.
All right. Fair enough.
For guns.
If you deal with the reality of the awfulness of it, of like, look, Tim Geithner is a giant piece of shit. And yes, bankers have far more outsized control over everything than they should. We don't need to take our country back from them. We need to remove the level of influence they have. They should still have some influence because that's part of our fucking system.
And so it's important
to make sure that there's everybody going on. But if you did that, if you explained that, then it'd be like, well, let's all participate in the political process and let's all vote and let's all do all this shit
and
let's get money out of politics. But they can't do that shit because that would fuck with their ability to sell gold.
Yeah, and it's super unsatisfying to live in a place where you're like, well, because things in the past that we can't control, sometimes we have to make really unsatisfying decisions.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to be like, hey, all these bankers should have no fucking control over anything. We should send them all to prison.
Right.
But in reality, in order for everybody to be better off, sometimes you do have to make compromises like the bailout bill.
Right.
Though I will say that that should have been handled a little bit better.
Way better.
There was a lot of complaints to be made, but the idea
of- Some of them should have gone to jail, but not all of them.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So there
at least somebody should have gone to jail.
There are things that sometimes to work towards the greater good of everybody, you have to say like, ah, man, I don't want to do that, but ah, well, you gotta do it. You gotta do it. And that's not something that exists in the vocabulary of Alex Jones, InfoWars, and all of these ding-dongs.
Right, right, right.
Speaking of ding-dongs, look at this guy.
Who is this fucking guy?
This is a new guy.
His mullet is starting the day off right.
What do you want to name this guy? I want to see how close you can get to his real name.
I'm going to go with Business Werewolf.
Not even close.
No, not right.
We've actually heard him on the Alex Jones show on our normal podcast before.
All right.
This is now his first appearance on the documentary.
Had a chance to speak with economist and author George Humphrey.
Oh, fuck you!
A power elite.
Why are they called economists or historians? You're nothing.
You can't even.
You're fucking
be a
idiot.
Member of their club. Unless you're a multi-billionaire. And friends, this is not about rich versus poor. This is about a very, very small handful of the worst criminal element on this planet.
Fine. I'll say that I looked into this and I don't think that George Humphrey's credentials are entirely made up. He calls himself as an economist, and to his credit, I found that he did graduate from the University of Houston with a degree in economics in 1972. So he has a, you know, at least a foundation of education in economics. He would go on to move to Austin, where, according to his bio, he owned a housing renovation company, then an importing operation, then a clothing store. Weird set of weird string.
Were they all the same store?
I have no idea. This is just in his bio. I don't know. I don't know what stretch of time that was over. Those are a lot of different skills, different businesses that are involved. No idea. Then, from 1985 to 1990, Humphrey served on the Austin City Council. He ran for office and was on the city council. After losing a re-election bid in 1990, he left politics behind and founded George Humphrey Productions, a film company that which it appears that they've only put out one film. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
They don't appear to be that much of a business.
I'm going to go with anybody who has that many varied business interests. All of them, I assume, failed.
That importing business?
I'm going to go with maybe instead of being interested in entrepreneurship. He was hiding money from the IRS.
I don't know what import business you're running in Austin.
The import.
There's not a, it's not
no,
on
you
the
import business.
It's not on
no,
the,
no, you just import things.
From where?
It's other
not,
places.
It's not like there's docks.
Look, look.
There's not a port.
Look, if I,
it's not on the border.
If I go to, my hometown and I pick up, some corn, I'm importing it back to Chicago, buddy.
That's a good point.
Import business.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
You have proven yourself correct and myself wrong. I'm going to give a written apology to George Humphrey. So
as, I don't think you need to do that.
As for him being an author, the only books I could really find on Amazon written by George Humphrey, they're all algebra textbooks that appear to only be used in Ireland. I get the sense that that's a different George Humphrey. So at press time, I can find no real evidence that he is a published author. Though there is one book that looks like it was written by him.
Okay.
And that is a companion book that goes along with a DVD that George Humphrey put out called, quote, 9/11, The Great Illusion, Endgame of the Illuminati, Our Choice, Fear or Love, question mark?
Subtitles.
Too many subtitles.
Subtitles. Jesus, dude.
Unwieldy. According to Amazon, there's a review on Amazon from a guy who definitely believes 9/11 was an inside job, but thinks that Humphrey's film is full of shit and factual inaccuracies. He apparently got the flight number of one of the planes at 9/11 wrong.
That's not good.
He gets the name of the CIA director on 9/11 wrong, along
That's
with tons
good.
Of other problems. The reviewer says, quote, "This is without a doubt one of the worst 9/11 truth DVDs out there. I brought all these factual inaccuracies to Humphrey's attention in 2005, only to get a rude letter of scorn in response." Way to go, George.
Nice work.
So it seems like that's sort of his past.
See, you know what? The Twin Towers are actually still standing right now.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 never even happened. It was a great illusion.
So we got a short stint on the Austin City Council. Weird business history.
Yeah.
Film production company that is very I can't figure out what's going on with it. Bad 9/11 documentary.
Right.
Perfect resume.
He's doing great.
Perfect Alex Jones resume.
And not to be somebody's dad in the 60s, uh-huh. But dude, cut your hair.
You think so?
It looks terrible.
It's got the sideburns in check.
No,
though.
He looks like he has a normal haircut and then emerging from the backer hair extension.
It is a little bit.
It's
he's
brutal.
Gray, he's grayish
it's
and a little
brutal.
Bit too far in the back.
Horrific.
You're really into people's appearance today.
I don't know why. Well, okay. Here's the thing. On this show, because it's 99% audio, I never get to criticize people's appearance. Now we're watching a documentary and I can see what all these assholes look like.
That's a fair point.
You guys have it coming.
Yeah, that's a fair point. All right, fine. Fair enough.
Manipulating and destroying the good people of this nation and of this world.
About this Obama with change. Look at the people he's put in to...
See, Zelensky doesn't need a haircut. He looks exactly like he should.
No.
Larry Summers. I love it. Every time they talk about Larry Summers...
That's not a nice picture of him.
Brilliant. He's another brilliant one.
They could have used a better Instagram filter.
Dismantle the Glass-Steagall Act. The Banking Act that was put in place in the 1930s. So the banks...
By FDR.
The one that Alex hates so much and supported the gutting of.
In the 1990s...
So, real quick, just about that, like, I have some pretty conflicted feelings about Larry Summers, Lawrence Summers. Like, yes, he absolutely was instrumental in helping take apart the regulations of the Glass-Steagall Act that didn't allow banks to work in concert.
Right.
As multiple varieties of banking institution. But he also, after the fact, realized that he fucked up. Like, he did say, like, he did say, it was bad. I shouldn't have done that. We were working on the wrong kind of information. He paraphrased John Maynard Keynes when he said about it, when circumstances change, I change my opinion.
Yeah.
Which to me does indicate someone who has wrestled with the idea that they did something wrong.
Right.
And then when he joined the Obama administration, certainly not everything he did was great, but he was a big part of helping push the policies that did end up fixing the problem that he had a part in starting. I'm not saying this is a hero story at all.
No.
But they aren't willing to go halfway and say, like, all right, you did after the fact, after the damage was done, you were a part of helping fix it.
Elected officials are going to be deceived because, generally speaking, our elected officials are not the intellectual... powerhouses that we might want them to be.
So he's
got a massive, massive lobbying campaign with very, very smart people trying to deceive him and finding the little places where he's vulnerable and convincing him otherwise. Mm-hmm. I get that. It happens.
Sure. So anyway, we're about to get into something a little complicated.
You had the beginning of the derivatives bubble. Thanks to people like Alan
Greenspan. Purchase the DVD copy of The Obama Deception at Infowars.com.
In the Obama administration. And the derivatives, I think, are the centerpiece of this entire problem today.
These are the same people.
Are we talking about the CFR still?
I don't know. They seem to shift around on topics.
I don't think we're talking about them at all. I think we're talking about,
So, in order to understand derivatives, like, we can't explain that on this show. The nature of derivatives and how they work. It's a very complicated thing. But suffice it to say that on a baseline level, I think Tarpley is fairly correct.
Yeah,
in
no,
terms
no, no.
of saying that a lot of the deregulation of the derivatives market played a very big part in what happened in the late 2000s.
Yes.
I think that that's fair. But I only say that assuming that what he's advocating for is greater regulation of the derivatives market.
He's not doing
that. But I don't think he is.
No, absolutely.
This is an Alex Jones documentary and he fucking hates government regulations. I don't really know what to think. If a deregulated derivatives market is the cause of all these problems, then wouldn't it stand to reason that more regulation on that market is the solution? Or would you say you're not allowed, the government should say you're not allowed to trade in derivatives. Now you've got a government dictating what the market is.
Massive regulation.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't
know. It doesn't get more regulation than you're not allowed to do this by law.
Uh-huh. My point on that is that, like, I kind of agree with Tarpley's analysis that this is a big part of the problem.
Yes.
But I don't know what his solution to that problem is because it's never spelled out in this documentary. So I don't know how much I can go on board with him.
Well, you can't.
Because it doesn't feel like that's what he said.
But you can't prescribe, you can recognize a problem, and you can recognize that the solution is something that you are ideologically opposed to, but you then can't prescribe that solution. So you can only recognize the problem.
Now we have the U.S. Treasury Secretary, who also is a Robert Rubin protege of the Larry
Tim Stubbs Geithner on screen, being
that
short.
Dismantled Glass-Steagall and broke apart the regulations that would have prohibited the banks.
You're supposed to hate regulations.
Yeah, I don't understand.
He was the
whose side are you on?
Of the New York Federal Reserve.
He was.
And now he's
That's
our
true.
Treasury Secretary.
So what?
And as we all know,
well, he's a bad dude.
The Federal Reserve is as federal as Federal Express.
That
I don't understand. What
Let me.
It's a private business. I got it.
And now we put this guy in charge of it?
So this is such a catchphrase. The Federal Reserve
is Federal Express. Yeah. I got it.
It's a catchphrase that anti-Federal Reserve propagandists have cooked up, and admittedly, it's fucking catchy.
It's catchy as shit.
Problem is, it's not true.
No, of course not, but it's catchy, man.
So this is a little complicated, but I think it's very important to understand the nature of the Federal Reserve as we go forward in this documentary. And since Gerald Celente brought up the it's as Federal Express, it's the best time to do it. So the Federal Reserve, it's not a private bank in the way that Alex and his crew present it. It's a public bank that holds private assets. To understand exactly what the issue is here, it's essential that we understand what the structure of the Federal Reserve actually looks like. The Federal Reserve is run by their board of governors, each of whom is appointed by the President of the United States, who are then required to be confirmed by the Senate. They serve terms and can be reappointed or not, so on a very basic level, they're accountable to the government. It's not a feature of any private company in this country that they would have that sort of structure.
No. Don't you remember how the president appointed Mark Zuckerberg to be president of Facebook?
Right. That doesn't exist anywhere else.
And then in 4 years, they will either re-up or appoint somebody new to head Facebook, right?
Yeah.
It's a private business that's as federal as the Federal Express.
Every company's CEO is required to be confirmed by the Senate.
Man, that actually might not be a terrible idea.
So each of the 12 federal...
Actually, that's a terrible idea.
Each of the 12 Federal Reserve banks are owned, in quotes, by commercial banks in the region they're located in. Basically, they're stockholders in these Federal Reserve banks. According to Investopedia, quote, an important distinction to make is that while these member banks are considered owners of the Fed, they don't have many of the usual rights of stockholders. Member banks, for example, are required to hold 6% of their capital as stock in their federal reserve bank. But by law, their dividend return on this investment is fixed at 6%. It can't be higher than that.
Oh shit, that's a good idea.
Right. Furthermore, that stock may not be sold or pledged as collateral for loans. It's specifically held there.
That's a good idea.
The Board of Governors and the Federal Open Market Committee are the two main bodies of the Federal Reserve. The board is made up of the 7 people appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. The Open Market Committee is made up of these same 7 board members and 5 of the heads of the 12 Federal Reserve banks. In essence, the balance of power always is in the hands of the 7 government-appointed governors who can outvote the heads of the regional banks if there is a friction between the two.
Query.
Yes.
In my capacity as an InfoWars reporter.
Yes.
I must ask you this question. Are they all Jews?
Oh boy. Oh boy. That's my response as a respondent. So also, the Federal Reserve banks don't rely on tax dollars to operate. Their budget is comprised of interest earned on the Fed's portfolio and interest on loans to depository institutions. However, they can't really make that much money because, quote, any excess earnings must be transferred to the U.S. Treasury. During 2018, for example, the income of the Reserve banks amounted to about $35.5 billion, of which $31.7 billion, or 89%, was transferred immediately to the U.S. Treasury. That, again, is a feature that does not exist with any other private for-profit business.
So, essentially, it is for-profit.
Yes.
However, in practice,
the assets are for profit.
It is massively non-profit.
Yes. It can't make a profit that isn't then taken
transferred to
the treasury.
Yeah. So it's a non-profit for-profit company.
It's super complicated why this exists in the structure that it does, but there are reasons. There's specific reasons.
No. I mean, it makes so much sense why people blanket hate the Fed.
Yeah.
Because while you're
explaining. It's very easy to do.
Because while you're explaining this, I am going through this and I'm like, okay. But there's that part of me in the back of my head that's like, I want to stop listening to you now. You know?
Right.
Like,
it's boring.
I want to be like, boo, no, or yay. But this is a massively complicated system.
Right.
That you,
but it's fairly easy to understand if you actually look at it.
And
like,
it's not
that hard. It's only hard to understand if you look at it through the prism of a solely private or solely public business.
Exactly.
And when you say private and public, we're talking about like the sectors, you know, whether it's a run by the government or run by business. So also the Federal Reserve is subject to exhaustive government oversight. They're required to release their balance sheets on a weekly basis. The Government Accountability Office conducts multiple reviews of their operations every year, and every year an outside unbiased auditor selected by the Office of the Inspector General does an audit of all their books.
The Inspector General actually is Inspector Deck right now.
That is true. I was trying to find a way to reference the fact that he and I both have a cross eye, and I'm excited about it. None of this.
We'll get there eventually. This is a long documentary.
But none of that stuff, like with the audits and stuff like that, that's not a feature of anything that you would ever see in a private business.
Yeah.
It exists because of the private-public intersection.
Of course.
That the Federal Reserve exists in. All of this is to say that no, the Federal Reserve is substantially more federal than Federal Express. This is just empty propaganda and a catchphrase that allows people to indoctrinate impressionable people who don't understand the complexity of the public-private nature
right.
of the Federal Reserve and why it has to be that way to function. If it were to be entirely private, the bank would have no reason to act not to act with complete impunity and plunder the fucking country. If they were entirely public, the entire Federal Reserve system could be compromised way too easily by a president or political party by packing all of Federal Reserve Bank with loyalists.
Like exactly.
All of the 12 banks with loyalists.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a delicate balance, and when properly regulated and with appropriate oversight applied, it does work pretty well.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, when you deregulate things, it doesn't work all that
Dan,
well.
No, Dan, come on. Because then regulation is bad all the time. Blanket statement.
Well, because when you start to deregulate it, it starts to act more closely to an entirely private business,
yep.
which the worry of that is that they will start acting with impunity and not in the public's best interest.
Yeah.
And that's what we see. That's why there is these really negative effects.
A bank without regulation is essentially a pirate enterprise.
There's no reason for them not to be.
Yeah, exactly. It is the East India Tea Company. Mm-hmm. When you get down to like unfettered pure capitalism, they will travel around the world and pillage and plunder and fuck if they won't kill people for it.
Well, when you have this bank that's responsible for setting like interest rates and stuff like that, it has to be apolitical because otherwise it could be at the whim of the.
Exactly.
And that's why that power has to be slightly external to the like Treasury Department.
For instance.
Because if it weren't, then the president could just say, hey, Treasury Secretary.
Exactly.
Inflate the economy.
For instance, if
because
you had a
my
president.
My numbers are down.
If you had a president who was blatantly in violation of the Emoluments Clause, he might direct the Federal Reserve to adjust an interest rate to whatever benefits his businesses the most.
Right. There is that fear.
Yeah.
If it were a wholly public institution.
Yeah.
Like, I understand why people hate the Federal Reserve. I get it. I get why some people are uncomfortable with it because it does seem like this big,
shadowy organization.
It does seem that way. And I think that like intense regulation and oversight is required for it to function.
Absolutely.
But I don't, like, the complaints that Alex Jones makes about it and all the people in this documentary make about it, we can look into what they say and how it works, and you can just see it's not true. Like, it's absolutely, they're just lying about it to demonize it, and there are real complaints you can make. And
yeah.
So when you make fake complaints, that means to me your argument is weak.
But I see why people hate it, and it's the same reason people hate fucking calculus.
Like, it's complicated.
Trying to understand it makes you angry.
Well, if like you just experienced.
No. I mean, I
jokingly.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, as I follow along with this, it all starts to turn into a picture that I understand.
Right.
I never looked into it before.
The
because,
first two steps are frustrating as hell. And
exactly.
then on the third step, you're like, oh.
Exactly. Oh, okay. So then,
right.
And you make the logical connection yourself after those couple of steps where you're like, oh, okay. So you do this because this and this protects against this and that. And then the whole puzzle starts to come into shape.
Right.
But if you get angry after two steps, like the second page of Google, I would even argue that maybe 99.9% of the fucking world never goes to the second page of Google.
No.
Then of course you're going to be like, well, the Fed is evil.
Right.
Because it's hard to understand.
And it feels good. It feels good to yell the Fed is
people,
fucking evil.
People hate things that are hard to understand.
Yeah. But at the same time, while we're saying all this stuff and why the system makes sense and all that, that doesn't mean that it's
oh, yeah,
a
yeah,
spotless
yeah.
history.
No.
So,
no.
But that's a whole different conversation.
As vigilant as you can be, there are so many opposing forces within our government. How many times have we seen the Fed regulated more and then regulated less and then regulated more and then regulated less and that whole thing?
By the way, like, I went to the Fed's, like, Federal Reserve's website, and I found their balance.
I was really hoping that you would suddenly surprise me with, like, by the way, on Tuesday, I went to the Fed.
I was made chairman. And that's why I have these great things to say about, no. I went to their website and it's really awesome. Like, it's navigatable.
Yeah.
You can find so much information.
Yeah.
I found their balance sheets. It was dated the day I looked at them.
God damn it!
Like, it was
what?
To the day.
These fucking guys!
And it was very easy to find.
Wait.
It's updated regularly.
Hold on.
Because they have to.
So you can literally audit the Fed yourself right now.
Well, I mean, you wouldn't be.
I mean, essentially,
you wouldn't be able to look at the physical dollars they have on hand, or anything.
Right.
Yes, you can look at their balance sheets and be like, oh, okay. You can track trends. You can do any of that shit.
Okay, so from here on out, here is the simplest thing that we do.
Okay,
if somebody says, like, "Oh, I hate the Fed; it's evil,"
right?
You just ask, "Have you been to their website?"
Well,
and whatever question you may have. Type it into their website shirts bar.
I'm not sure it proves they're not evil those people.
No. I'm not saying that we are talking about good or evil at this point.
Yeah.
I'm just asking, have you been to their website? Because if you haven't,
then
you
don't know all that information is there.
Exactly. If you haven't even looked at it, then fuck off. We're not going to have a conversation where you haven't even looked into it.
Here's the feeling that I have, and I should come out of the closet a little bit about this.
Okay.
I'm pro Federal Reserve. I think it does a very important service to our economy.
I mean, just based on historically alone.
Yeah.
How many massive crashes did we have before?
We'll get into that later.
How many massive crashes do we have after the Federal Reserve?
Yeah.
What were the massive crashes caused after the Federal Reserve, et cetera?
Right. It's very easy to track and you can tell all that.
Yeah.
I think it's a very positive influence. But even having that said, I go into Alex Jones's documentary, The Obama Deception, and anytime I listen to it, and if he has an argument that's specific, I'm willing to listen to it. Like, in this case, Gerald Celente saying it's as Federal Express.
Right.
That is something I can look into. And if I looked into it and I found, oh my God, it is an entirely private company.
Right.
I have no bones about telling you that.
Right.
I have no bones about coming out here on the podcast and saying, like, holy shit, Celente is right. This is fucked up. Because that would be fucked up.
That would be fucked up!
Yeah. If you had an entirely private for-profit company that was setting interest rates and all the other, like, financial responsibilities that they have, like the money supply.
Yeah.
I would be like, hey guys, bad news.
Right?
We need to end the Fed.
Right! Especially since we are chroniclers of fucked up shit.
It's not true.
Like, I'm fine with fucked up shit coming from anywhere, man.
Yeah.
It just turns out that so much of the fucked up shit they're saying is not true and blatantly trying to fuck over people.
Yep. Anyway. Hey, everybody. Dan here. That is where we are going to have to cut things off for today. But it's a very exciting episode, I believe. I think. I don't know. Maybe it's wrong of me to say. I'm kind of a biased source of information. Always love to tell people about how Barry Goldwater created those underpants. That's always, you know, if we were doing this documentary and that was the only thing I got to tell people about, I think it would be worth it just to tell you about the weird, weird life that Barry Goldwater lived. But it's nice to end this with just a glimpse at just how wrong Alex is on a fundamental level, just about one of his biggest issues vis-a-vis the Federal Reserve and whether or not it's public or private as a business. So that's nice. And that should, I really think that that's something very important for us to all carry with us. When we understand that sort of thing, you really start to understand what is the underpinning of so many of Alex Jones's beliefs. And when you realize that that is what's underneath it, something that is a fundamental elementary misunderstanding, it really starts to make things look a little sadder than, sadder or more nefarious, and maybe both. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with part 3. But for now we have a website. It's, knowledgefight.com. Also, we're on Twitter. That is at knowledge_fight. We're on Facebook. We have a group called Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're Brilliant, which is a lot of fun. People post stuff and talk about nonsense. And if you'd like to join, please come on over. The water is okay. Beyond that, we're on iTunes. It'd be great if you could subscribe, leave a review, all that good stuff. Maybe recommend us to your peeps. Word of mouth is the best way to spread things. People recommending something get more likely to blah. Anyway, guys, we thank you so much. We'll be back tomorrow. But until then, I don't know. Let's see. Let me see if I can come up off the top of my head with someone who has not killed anybody. Ah, I was watching Survivor Series the other night. WWE Survivor Series and Braun Strowman. That guy is a monster among men. He's a big old hoss of a man. But he has never killed anybody. I don't think he's even killed anybody in kayfabe. I'm certain as a human, the guy who portrays the character of Braun Strowman has never killed anybody. But there is one guy who technically probably may have killed somebody, and that is Alex Jones.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.